hot new drama is coming to Disney Plus.
5, 6, 7, 8.
When lives are at stake.
I have a pulse.
We gotta move fast.
Hearts are racing.
I love you, and I'm gonna love you.
And family is everything.
All right, team. We work side by side.
New drama can't wait. Set a reminder to stream the latest seasons of Grey's Anatomy and 9-1-1.
Welcome back.
And the new series, Dr. Odyssey.
Brace for impact.
Exclusively on Disney Plus. Streaming this October from $4.99 a month, 18 plus subscription required.
What's 2FA security on Kraken? Let's say I'm captaining my football team and we're up by a goal against, I don't know, Roverton Rovers. Do we relax? No way. Time to create an extra line of defense and protect that lead. That's like 2FA on Kraken, a surefire way to keep what you already have safe and sound. Go to kraken.com and see what crypto can be. Don't invest unless you're prepared to lose all the money you invest. This is a high-risk investment and you should not expect to be protected if something goes wrong.
From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
How do you grow without losing what made you special in the first place? That's something a lot of business owners ask me, and they're right to worry about it. Growth can be confusing. It can create clutter. It can take you away from what motivated and guided you. And that is what I am talking about today with two of the most loved people and entrepreneurs in America, Chip and Joanna Gaines, who have spent a lot of time thinking about this question for themselves.
Joe and I were just looking back in these two decades going, What is it about this experience that we want more of and that we want to go and press into? What of this experience would we might have done differently had we been able to have a crystal ball?
That, of course, is Chip. Because here's the thing. If you know who Chip and Joanna Gaines are, then what do you think of? The answer is probably home, renovations, design, lifestyle, because Chip and Joanna Gaines became famous for their TV show, Fixer Upper, then built out a massive collection of successful businesses in that space. A retail epicenter in Waco that attracts roughly 1 million visitors a year, a magazine, a cable TV network, a hotel venture, a lot of home and design products, all operating under the name Magnolia. And now, they are also launching a slate of new TV shows on Max that includes a roller skating competition show called Roller Jam, a game show where humans compete in mazes against actual hamsters, which is called Human versus Hamster, and a talent competition series for people who deferred their dreams of stardom called Second Chance Stage. And maybe you're thinking, like I did, okay, those all sound fun. And personally, I can confirm that Humans versus Hamsters is indeed very fun, especially if you're watching with your kids. But also, what does that have to do with anything that Chip and Joanna Gaines have done before? And what does that say about how they're approaching the growth of their business? And how do they manage that question of what does healthy growth even look like? And what's the point of it all? And that is the thing that I wanted to talk with them about, because I know that this is a question that they ask themselves. I first interviewed Chip a number of years ago, and then we stayed in touch. He's just a really generous, delightful guy. And he had told me that this growth that they are on is something that they think really deeply about. They want to make sure that they understand what's the purpose of it all, and what does it all mean, and does it all tie together in a way that makes sense for them. And so as this slate of shows came out on Max, which felt pretty different from everything else that they're doing, I thought, what a great time to have a conversation about how they're thinking about this exact question. How do you grow without losing the thing that made you special in the first place? And I'm going to give you just a little teaser of the answer. And it's this phrase from Joanna.
The whole point of it for us as a company is, how do we make space for meaningful moments?
How do we make space for meaningful moments? You will come to understand exactly how meaningful that question is, and even more importantly, how meaningful it is to identify something like that for yourself. And that is what we're talking about today on Problem Solvers, coming up right after the break.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What comes to mind when you hear the word gratitude?
Maybe it's a daily practice, or maybe it feels hard to be grateful right now. Don't forget to give yourself some thanks by investing in your well-being. BetterHelp is the largest online therapy provider in the world, connecting you to qualified professionals via phone, video, or message chat. Let the gratitude flow. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
All right, we're back. Today, I'm talking with Chip and Joanna Gaines of Magnolia Network. And starting this fall on Max, the show's Roller Jam, Second Chance Stage, and Human versus Hamster, which they have executive produced. So let's just jump into it. When I started the conversation, I repeated to Chip and Joanna basically what I told you in the intro to this podcast, which is it's so important to find that through line in your work and to understand the internal logic of why something is the right opportunity for you or isn't. And with this moment in which they're doing something that feels a little different, I thought it would be so helpful to hear from two people who are so incredibly thoughtful about their business and their brand and their relationship to their audience to articulate how they have been thinking about it and making sense of it so that they recognize the right opportunities ahead. And Chip was the first to answer.
I love this question, and do not feel like you're stepping on anybody's toes, because we love to be challenged. We love devil's advocate perspective, not that's one, yeah, but just even if it were, you know, we've become very aware that for us, this is just Joe and I speaking, and some entrepreneurs may agree with this. And I do say, I'm funny, because as I start a point, I already start building the counter argument to that point. I'm not an easy guy to talk to, because sometimes I'm moving in two directions.
I've picked up on that from our previous conversations, but I appreciate it.
Simultaneously. Yeah, exactly. But my original point is this: we love teams. And when we do things, we like for people to be around the room that are questioning our thoughts, questioning our intentions. Is this right for Magnolia? Is this right for Chip and Joanna? We like people who even are in the room going, hey, we actually agree with you, but here's some counter argument or thought. But then I pivot that reality to the idea that groupthink and groups sometimes can be completely paralyzing. And sometimes somebody's just got to step out and say, this is what we're doing, and here's what we're doing and why, and everybody rally behind one position. And so I'm feeling, I see both of these points, but two things come to mind as you were building that thought. And Joe and I are very adamant that what got us here was risky, was challenging, was impossible, was miraculous, was beautiful. Lightning in a bottle has been used on Joe and I's behalf so many times that it now has become a cliche, and it makes you want to puke in response to someone saying that, because you're like, it wasn't two idiots walking around stumbling around in a rainstorm and then this thing happened. And it was a little bit of thought and a little bit of strategery and all the things that are the positives of potentially what occurred here. But we don't disagree with that sentiment that what we loved was it was risky. We were way ahead of our skis. And the whole idea about faking it till you make it, we were both inundated with those ideas. And as you make it through that making it till or faking it till you make it stage, and then all of a sudden you've made it, then it's a bit disorienting, because you're then forced with the reality, are we still faking it, or have now we in fact made it? Which phase are we in? And I think Joe and I, just after 10 years looking back in the rearview mirror, 10 years of the Fixer Upper universe, and then there were 10 years that preceded that 10 years. So Ned, it's 20 years. And so Joe and I were just looking back in these two decades going, what is it about this experience that we want more of and that we want to go and press into? What of this experience would we might have done differently had we been able to have a crystal ball or walk backwards, if you could, and reenact it? And so I don't know why the analogy, this will decipher where we are generationally between ourselves, Jason. There was a famous country and Western singer that you probably have not heard of. He's a very small, very quaint star in the country genre named Garth Brooks.
Heard of him.
Heard
of him.
He said, I've heard of
it. Sure.
And said Garth Brooks, when I was, I don't even know, a young man in my 20s, decided to go out and do something that was radical and really risky and change the way his audience might perceive him. And he created a counter personality. I'm probably butchering this and I haven't prepared this speech at all, but what is coming to me here on the fly. And he went out and did it. And the only reason I remember this so vividly is my last name is Gaines. Mm-hmm. And somehow he picked the name Chris Gaines to become this kind of counter personality and went and created a record and did a record on a totally different, under a totally different synonym or whatever the term is, and a stage name.
Pseudonym.
I'm always so close.
It's close. It was close to synonym. Yeah.
Yeah. But most people just let me go with it. But thank you for the correction.
You're welcome.
The pseudonym. And but it was such a risk that he took. And I remember reading about why he did it. And his point was just, I feel like I've done it all. I feel like I've, you know, sold out stadiums. I've done all this incredible stuff in my lane. And what got me here was taking all these drastic risks. And I wanted to take another risk. And even if it didn't work out, which in that particular case, probably he would argue, hey, he missed it in some way or it didn't work just from a commercial sense, but maybe it was something great for his soul. Maybe it did work because it worked for him, even if it didn't in fact work for the audience. And Joe and I just have been wrestling through kind of philosophical things like that. And then that led us to this place. Do we want to continue to create this incredible content as it relates to the genre that we're completely familiar with, that we're almost experts in, dare I say? That's a little knock on wood because debatable. But the idea is, and we wanted to make a drastic pivot. And so we talked to David Zasloff, we talked to Casey Bloys, all of our super bosses in the Warner Brothers Discovery ecosystem. And these two specifically and several others were like, you guys go for it, man. We've got this pool of money. You guys are able to do whatever you want to do as it relates to Magnolia Network, spend it however you feel comfortable if you want to pivot. And then the idea became really clear that we then, exactly to your point about having so many options, we had 1,000 options up on a wall, and at least temporarily, it became a bit paralyzing. Hmm. But as we started narrowing these 1,000 options down to what ended up being the 4 that we selected, we kept laughing because the 4 units that we ended up landing on have really no clear through line. It's not really obvious what connects the 4 of them, except for that Allison Page said this beautifully. We were on a little media tour and a panel in New York here this past week. And Allison Page, as I was looking to her and somebody asked her kind of a similar questions, man, one might say these 4 shows have nothing in common. And she said, you know what? The one thing it does have in common is authenticity and joy. And that's what Chip and Joe have always been about. And again, we didn't prepare this. I didn't know she was going to say it. And we both were like, wow, that just felt beautiful. And the idea that these 4 shows about Joe and I in regards to our authenticity and the fact that we want people, we've coined this time together as watch together. And one of the things that we appreciate most about our career is just that lots of families come up and say, man, my grandma's on one side of the couch, the couple, and then a couple of kids or grandkids, you know, on the opposite side of the couch. It just feels a little bit like the old days where we would all come together and consume the same content at the same time. And we wanted to create an environment to where you could really do that. You could sit around a couch or you could sit around a space and all engage in the content at the same time and bring everybody together, force everybody to have that moment together in time, if you will. And so all that to say, even though it is very true that these 4 shows are drastically different, I'm not sure there's an obvious fit from a Rubik's Cube standpoint. The thing that we love about the through line that does, in fact, precede all 4 of these shows, which kind of came together through the process of it. I'm not sure that we really knew these 4 shows were the 4 shows that were going to make it through the gauntlet. But as the gauntlet became clearer and clearer, these 4 shows clearly popped out. And it was a really fun process. It was really fun. And it challenged Joe and I in a really tangible way, back to my original point, which I think is going to pay dividends for she and I both, even if for some reason these don't become commercial successes. Obviously, we hope they will, and we want them to. We don't even want to speak over it, the alternative option. But if they do not work for whatever reason, the experience itself was worth the process. And Joe and I are just really thankful that we had that time and had that opportunity to experiment with this. And really, in fairness, and we've felt this about a lot of the stuff we've done, even if it doesn't work, we love it and we are very proud of it, where the sword that we refuse to die on is the one that somebody kind of forces us to do something we don't really feel wonderful about, and we put it out there because it's quote unquote what they want or what we're supposed to do. And then we regret it later because we knew all along it really wasn't about us and it really wasn't about things that we cared about, where these shows are about us and about what we care about. And so in that vein, even if they don't work, it's a sword that we gladly die on if it comes to that.
But I also think just with the network side, I think the beauty in that we get to decide the content is that balance of, we'll still have that lifestyle, the food, the design, the home, the stuff that we are so passionate about because it's the work we do here. And then getting to see other storytellers do that same thing in their own unique way. This was more of, when we think about Magnolia, whether it's the magazine, our shop at the silos, the network, the whole point of it for us as a company is, how do we make space for meaningful moments? So whether you're watching someone cook on a cooking show, or you're sitting together with your family watching a funny or a really sweet, sentimental, like a competition show, it's the idea of, how do we bring people together for these meaningful moments? So it's that balance that we're really playing with, of just these smaller curated shows and then these bigger, brighter, louder, fun shows. And I think that's really who we are. I think at the end of the day, I don't own a hamster, but what I do know is I'm married to the funniest guy I know. So of course we're doing human versus hamster.
That show really spoke to me, Jason. I will admit, just to be super clear, yeah, of the three, that was the one that was the chip.
It was so random and amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Seen that one to continue to move through the gauntlet, whether anybody agreed or not. So I was definitely in a bit of a lone wolf scenario as it relates to that. But you,
well,
watch.
I will have just some extra data points here. First of all, you guys don't own a hamster. I do own a hamster.
Wow.
Her name is Candy. That's for short. Cantaloupe, full name. And so I happen to have a great opportunity here to showcase Human versus Hamster to my five-year-old, who was up at 2 a.m. vomiting this past. So he is laying down on the couch downstairs right now. And so I walked down there with Human versus Hamster, and I showed it to him for a few minutes. And I just want you, so this is in his addled state here. That is a thumbs up. That is a full thumbs up. And it really delighted him. And it is, it's so weird, but also unexpected. But like, Joanna, that thing that you just said there, I to me is the key to the question, that you have this phrase, how do we make space for meaningful moments? And you have defined that in one way for a while. And then this is another way to explore what a meaningful moment is. And that I wonder, is, and I say it almost as a theory for you to respond to, but that feels like the logic to me. It reminds me in a way of, I was once talking to the CEO of a baking mix company, and they were going through a major change in their product line. And he said to me, look, like, we're in trouble if we think of ourselves as just making baking mixes. But if we think of ourselves as bringing joy to people with sweet baked goods, then that opens up all sorts of opportunities. And it's about that mission statement that you craft for yourself, because once you have it, then you, like, your challenge is actually to start pushing the boundaries of what you think that mission encompasses. Chip, you talked about playing it safe, not wanting to play it safe, right? Like, you could easily say, how do we make space for meaningful moments? But then you only define a small kind of meaningful moment that you're going to live in.
Oh.
But growth is actually taking very seriously the language that you put there. How do we make space for meaningful moments? What else are meaningful moments? I would say going downstairs with, like, my five-year-old who's recovering from a stomach bug and watching Hamster versus Humans with him for a few minutes is a meaningful moment. It's maybe not the kind of ones that you were creating before, but it is exactly what that mission is.
When we evaluated, like when we step back and we go to the silos and we see who's coming to the silos, it's every age. Like, it just blows our mind that it's a girl's group of friends. It's a grandma, a grandpa, it's grandkids, it's family. And then when we hear about the people who used to watch Fixer, it's family, it's every age. And Chip and I, with our five kids, family is obviously our biggest priority. And to what Chip was saying, we just saw this place where, oh, we can make hopefully some content and an impact in that space where you can get everybody from every age together to feel this emotion, whether that's with Second Chance Stage, and you get to see people re-unearthing their dream that they've left in the past, but now they're bringing that back to life, and you get to experience that emotion with them and root for them so that as you see them play that out, or it's laughing when it's giggling over the craziness of Human versus Hamster or Roller Jam, where it's just delight. It's watching people do something that most people can't do, and cheering on your favorite team. It's just this idea that you get to feel these emotions together. Mm-hmm. And I think in just the world we live in, that when I think about feeling every morning, I'm like, I want to feel today, because you can get really stuck in your schedule. You can get stuck in just the rhythm of your busyness. And for me, it's like, how do I feel? How do I experience life to the fullest? And emotions, tapping into that emotion, that's that core memory stuff. For us, it's if you're together with the people you love and you're watching something and you're all experiencing the same emotion, there's something really special and meaningful about that.
Love that answer. Let me ask you guys this. I want to go back to this idea that Chip had introduced about the risk-taking and not doing something just because, Chip, the phrase you used was because it's what they want. What it reminded me of is one of my favorite articles of all time, which was published in Harvard Business Review. The headline was, "Why do big companies stop innovating?" And the answer that it offered was, like, big companies start with an innovation and that gives them a toehold in the market. And then over time, as they grow, they just start to shift more and more, and eventually all of their resources away from innovation and towards efficiency.
Wow.
Just doing the exact same thing over and over again, just faster, better, and cheaper. And doing that can work for a while until it doesn't, because somebody else comes along and eats your lunch. And so you need to be constantly pushing yourself, but it's really hard. Now, in a company, like, that becomes really hard because all the people become incentivized to just do the same thing over and over again, right? If everyone's incentive is to just... But you're describing something different, the two of you. You're describing wanting to be in a room with, and I suppose building a team with, people who are going to push back. You're also describing wanting to be really mindful of not doing something just because it's what they want, which is to say, like, something that probably by the numbers is going to have a better chance of success, but rather something that feels more intellectually and creatively satisfying. And so my question is, how do you push yourselves to do that? Have you found way of thinking, some system, some something that is able to keep you going past where you have already established success clearly is?
I feel like that's innately who Chip is. Like, he, I think, refuses to get stuck in a thing, or that's like my comfort is, let's do this for the rest of our lives and not pivot ever. Really, where I feel the safest.
But as you think of that thought, that reality,
yes,
to filter it through Jason's question, and what brings you comfort to do what feels uncomfortable?
Yeah, because I have you as a partner who says, Joe, life is just one big experiment.
Like, okay, hold on. Pause again.
Okay.
Forget the me part of it, because you have to agree to it.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
I do agree.
How do you, as a person that doesn't feel comfortable doing that, naturally,
yeah, I'll tell you,
how do you get to those places that I'm going to do this thing that makes me feel uncomfortable?
I mean, first thing that comes to mind is this idea of skydiving, which I've never done. But the idea that my whole life, with every decision I've ever made, sometimes I equate it to, I feel like I'm standing at the edge of a mountain and I have to jump. And then I jump when I say yes. And that moving forward is such an amazing feeling. Mm. Most of my life, that fear kept me back. So I never felt the exhilaration of, I don't know what's next. I didn't want to. I wanted to know I was safely planted on, you know, the ground.
Yes.
And I think the more and more I exercise that muscle that I would say I didn't exercise for the first half of my life, now I'm like, that feeling is, it's not addictive in a way where I'm just always going to say yes to stuff, but it's that I want to feel that more than I feel comfort and safe on the ground. And so I think with that, when I hear Chip say, you know, let's experiment, that means there could be a failure. There could be a win, but there's something that's freeing about let's experiment. And so I think my mindset now is like, how are we evolving? How are we creating out of curiosity rather than just creating? Because for us, it's like, how are we keeping our eyes open, but also like our feelers out? Because I feel like most of what we built has been pretty instinctive. It's been more gut. Like, mm-hmm. how do we feel about this? And no matter how big this business gets, for us, that's really core to who we are. How do we feel? Even though it makes sense to say yes to this, if we're not feeling it, we're still going to say no. Same with all of these decisions that we made, even with these shows. We both felt like this is fun. This could be joy. This could be delight. Let's experiment. So I feel like I've had a really great coach. God knows where I'd be if I wouldn't have met him. I'd be stuck somewhere in a corner.
Oh, you'd probably be living your best life. It would be a very safe, simple life, but it might be your best life.
Predictable for sure, but this is more fun.
But this is very interesting. And Chip, I appreciate you pushing her there. You made my job easy. But also, Joanna, don't sell yourself short here. And I say this to you, but I also say it to everybody who relates to what you just said, because what I was thinking about when you were talking about Chip pushing you, I love that phrase, life is an experiment. It is. But also, you made a decision to trust a person who thought totally differently than you. And that by itself is a kind of risk taking, isn't it?
that's a really good point.
That's why I keep messing with her, because I've really, when I was younger, we've been married for 20 plus years now. So in our early marriage, I thought I was right and she was wrong. And I was an optimist. She was a bit of a pessimist that she would refer to as a realist because she was insecure to say she was a pessimist. I mean, it was just crazy. But the older I've gotten, I've realized her job is actually the much harder position, because this comes very natural to me and I feel comfortable, uncomfortable. I feel good out of my comfort zone, if that makes sense. For her to do this is 1,000 times more challenging. So I appreciate, Jason, your sentiment about, hey, don't sell yourself short. And that's why I wanted to press on you there, because for you, it's fine and kind for you to say, oh, it was him and I'm really thankful. But what's truer is that you had to make a very hard decision. And I would argue, if we were to rewind the tape and really be able to evaluate how hard was it for me to make that decision? And I would argue not very hard at all, because it's comfortable for me to make that. For you to make that decision was very complicated and hard and difficult. And I just want to encourage you, that's a real thing that you should feel proud about, because it's one thing for the guy who does it almost naturally. It's, as an athlete, I was always a mid-grade athlete. The older I get, there's an old joke in our family that the older we get, the better we were younger, because nobody can verify it. Nobody can challenge it. Of course, I was all American in my mind, but in fairness, I was always this mid-range athlete. I was really good in some contexts, but the further up the food chain, I got less good because the pool or the environment got more competitive and bigger. As I say that, it was like, it feels that similar way. It was like, I'm good at making these complicated decisions and these complicated risks. But on the flip argument with you, not being comfortable in those ways is really the more interesting predicament, because you just didn't feel all that comfortable under the circumstances. You're laughing at me.
Maybe I'm the riskiest of the two of us.
That's my point. Yeah.
Thank you, Jason.
Yeah.
It's my life believing that.
There you go.
You should. You took the longer. I have a friend who defines success as distance traveled. And under the way that we're framing it here, the distance traveled for you to these kinds of decisions is larger, which is the greater accomplishment.
Totally. She's just very thorough and she's very thoughtful. And that has been very helpful for someone like myself, who is not really any of those things. So when we complement each other in those ways, we really have become a beautiful, we're happily married. We've got 5 beautiful kids, but we really do just like each other. We enjoy working together. We enjoy building things together. Every now and then we creep into one another's lanes. Nobody's perfect. And we bump into each other once in a while, but it's almost 9 out of 10 times we're really happy. I'm really happy to let her do what she was built to do and what she was born to do. And she's really happy to have me do the counter pulling. But then somehow we just learned early in our relationship, and this is true for business in general, it's just 1 plus 1 really doesn't equal 2. because that would be boring. 1 + 1 kind of equals 10 or 100 or 1,000. And when you feel that kind of momentum and that kind of energy, Joe was using the word addicted to this feeling of kind of jumping off and moving forward and taking chances and risks. So you get addicted to this idea that 1 + 1 might equal 10 or 100. And it's fun to feel that momentum and that energy in your favor.
Yeah. I'll add one final line of inquiry here to build off of what we've talked about, which is, Chip, towards the beginning, you had said that you guys really love being in the room with, surrounding yourself with people who are willing to push back. And that is to say, you like to surround yourself by and trust people who think differently than you, which is exactly what we were just talking about. That is, the dynamic of the two of you expanded outward into a team. And that is hard. That is a hard thing to do. It's hard to find those people, and then it's hard to trust those people. And so I'd love to hear you guys speak. You could, whether it's about what you found in the personal dynamics of the two, or the team that you have, which is clearly an amazing team, and that you're being thoughtful about bringing people in who can contribute and also feel empowered to hold a line, which is really important. I found, certainly as a leader myself, and I know you have too, like, I value the people the most who can tell me that my idea is bad, because most people can't do that. Most people are afraid to do that. How do you find those people? How do you trust those people?
Yeah, my first thought is just, when I think about people, just in the grand sense of things, I think what Chip and I have really just valued about people is, especially the more, like, when we think about people in a room, the more unique and different their life is than ours, or their thoughts than ours, we know, oh yes, that we're going to sharpen each other. We're going to, and like you said, it starts with us. We're very different in the way we think about a lot of things. In some ways, we find this middle place, and, oh, we're alike in those areas. But for the most part, where we found strength in our relationship is in our differences, or in the way I look at something versus how he looks at it. So then you surround yourself with people that we have found on our team, or even our friend groups. And I think we come to the table recognizing that those differences are going to make us see in a new way. Mm. It's going to make us think in a new way. And we're all going to come out of the room richer, smarter, more curious. And so I think for us, especially for Chip, that's something he's always mandated, is I don't want to be in a room where we're all saying the same thing. And we're all saying yes to, he has to have people that challenges, as he'd call it, devil's advocate. Say that, but then what's the other side? I don't know. I just think that's the beauty of relationships, whether it's just a couple or it's a team, is that valuing and respecting the differences and knowing that's actually going to make you richer is something that I think we can all keep in mind as we step outside, as we look on social media, that it's not about finding one lane thinkers that are thinking just like you. Because guess what? In real life, no one should be thinking. We're all created so uniquely different that when you strip everything down to just the core of who you are as a human, that is something that I think for us is like, how do we draw that out? That real you had, and then what is your one specific lane that only you carry and then only you have? And I don't know, that's not answering your question, but I just think the value of our differences is such a great thing. And I just, it would be nice if...
How have you found people that kind of fit that mold? I think
in some way, I don't know if this is the right answer as far as saying this word. I think we attract all different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. So even people that come to work here with us at Magnolia, all different kinds of people. And I don't know why, but I think it's beautiful that just when you sit at a table of 15 people, you look at everybody and no one's life is the same. I don't know if that answers the question, but I think this company in some ways has so many different sides to it, even though the core is the same. I feel like we've just been really fortunate in that we've attracted talent that's just from all over, from all different walks of life. And we're just incredibly thankful and proud of that team.
And as we wrestle with that back to the 1 + 1 = 10 thing, mm-hmm. similar in that we have found that diversity makes us stronger. And I think that people really do get lost in the group trap. And I think people hire people that look and smell and feel exactly like themselves. We know there's studies. If I'm an interviewer, I want the person across the desk to mirror me. And Joe and I don't know. And it wasn't even real strategic. It was like a lot of things that have gone well for us. This was not wildly thought out. It wasn't perfectly intentional, but we wanted people to be around us that cared more about what we were trying to accomplish than our feelings about our opinion on how to accomplish it, if that makes sense. And I think we've just been very fortunate that we have a lot of great people. Now, to your question specifically, how do you attract people? I'm not sure we know how to answer that question, because I really do believe Joe's hitting on something. People were drawn to us, even on Twitter. I've got people that think I'm a Democrat, and there's people that think I'm a Republican. And I like to say to both of them, they're right. And because we want to be neutral in so many ways, because it's, listen, we want you all to come. We want a debate. We want there to be healthy discussion in our feeds. And of course, sometimes there are and sometimes there aren't. Nobody, again, I'm not sure we've done a great job in that regard, but I love the fact that people are drawn to us and are like, you're like me, right? And we always smile and are like, whether or not that's true or not, in the literal fundamental sense is, yeah, for Joe and I, we always joke, we'll find out over a cup of coffee. We'll find out over years and years of relationship, not over a tweet, not over a moment in time to where we have to say this thing or that thing, because it tears away all the nuances of that thought and that idea. And Joe and I are very nuanced people where it's not as obvious as this thought or that thought, check right or check left or red or blue. And we want there to be a place in our ecosystem for debates and heated discussions and beautiful late night moments. And Joe and I have experienced hundreds, if not thousands of those. And back to my original sentiment, which is just what we found is when we come out of those, even sometimes when you're a little hurt by them, or you're exhausted, or you feel like you were misunderstood, or whatever the downsides to those ideas might look like, the upside is that end conclusion, the baby that was formed, the idea that we articulated is much, much stronger because there were so many different angles that were considered as we were wrestling through it, that we would never go back. We would end. I think the world needs to hear this. And Jason, no pressure, but we really need you to get this perfectly right and articulate it in a beautiful way, because our country is just in this desperate place to where it's right or left and we hate each other or we don't, or there's God or there's no God, or there's religion or there's no religion. And it's just for Joe and I, there's just a table of all those individuals seated. And it's like, how do we make the best decision for the largest number of people possible? And Joe and I have found that to be true, is that as we've scaled and as this thing has gotten bigger and bigger, we're not wanting this to be a niche market that only speaks to this particular group. Even as Joe and I joke about the inception of our show, I remember the producers, and there might have even been a network executive or two in this moment that I'm referring to, but they were like, you've got to get out of Waco. Eventually, we've got to take this elsewhere because this isn't going to work. And we were like, why not? And we weren't saying that this real bravado way, oh, Waco's the best and it's got to be Waco. We were just like, why not? And they were like, because this has to scale. You guys live on a farm. You've got five kids. Kids, you live in this community, nobody's going to be able to relate to this thing. And we were like, well, that does make a lot of sense. I bet nobody's going to be able to relate to it. But as it started evolving, to the contrary, people on both sides of the coast send letters or come physically on their 13th anniversary. And you're just like, no, people did relate. They related not because we lived on a farm and we had five kids and appeared to be an odd couple with too many animals and too many kids, but to the contrary, a couple that really cared about one another and cared about our community and cared about our clients. And as that resonated with people that even lived in completely different ecosystems, I think net, the bottom line of it all was that we want to do, we want to engage in opportunities that provide opportunities for more and more of that. More people around a TV talking about the same topics and the ideas that make them think about the world in a different way. Even that skating competition was a really fascinating one, because that's an ecosystem within inside an ecosystem, maybe about a skateboarder, and that's become a little mass market, but a roller skater, and you find out about these communities and how these kids go to those places to find home and find community and find comfort and find athleticism and all these things. You're like, who knew? I mean, it was just such a mind-boggling and mind-expanding experience to find those people that were in those places that we didn't even know about. And wouldn't that be fun? Kind of almost like dancing with the stars. Not everybody dances and not everybody understands the complicated nuance of a foxtrot or whatever they're doing out there. But when you watch it and you're in the moment of it, it feels beautiful and it feels like it really brings everybody together over a common thing. And this skating thing we really hope is a version of all that.
Maybe to your point, to sum up, is if we can create content that brings people together, regardless of all the things that are out there, then that is really fulfilling. That's rewarding. It's an honor. And so I think that's where our heads are always at. What will bring people together? What will drown out the noise of everything that we're disagreeing on, but bring that, again, that human connection and that thing, which is, I think, a lot of what we're making with these shows. It's back to feeling, it's hope, it's joy, it's light. Just even if it's just for 30 minutes, then it's worth all of it for sure.
To bring it all full circle, what I heard in that answer was a callback that I don't know that you guys were even thinking about making or that you even thought of it this way. But, you know, talking about attracting people, which, you know, doesn't happen by itself. It happens because of something that you put out in the world and then the kind of people that you are signaling to, because it's the kind of people that you are, then become attracted by it. That's how you find great people. And then Chip talking about making space for conversations that don't divide, recognizing how much more we have in common than we don't. And then Joanna, you bringing it back to the content. Literally all of that fits within the language that you had given me at the beginning of the conversation. How do we make space for meaningful moments? It's actually all of that. It is not just the content, but it is also the way in which you craft your team, and it is the way in which you engage your audience. And I say that to you to see if you have any response to it, but I also say it to everyone listening because it really shows you the power of having a real clarity of purpose and vision, because then it becomes the through line, not just through the work that you do, but the way in which you do that work.
Man, brother. Touchdown. No kidding. I don't know how to.
I'm not going
to
go over that.
Yeah. Speaking of this weekend at that group, that a conference in New York, somebody said something to Joe and they expect all of us to go through this round table of responses.
Yeah.
And Joe said this perfect response. And everybody afterwards were like, we're going to step. I feel equally insecure as you concluded that. Of all my nonsense and a beautiful
nice summary.
Thank you.
I feel like you summarized it in a perfect way for sure.
All right, then that's a wrap.
And that's our episode. I would love to hear what you think and maybe even about a problem that you solved. You can find me at my website, jasonfeifer.com. JASONFEIFER.com. Also, I have some more useful stuff for you. I write a newsletter about how to future-proof yourself and become more adaptable and optimistic. I would love for you to sign up. It is at jasonfeifer.bulletin.com. Also, check out my other podcast. It's called Build for Tomorrow. In each episode, I take on some belief that we have that holds us back from progress and show you why it is not as bad as you think. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media and comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Thanks to Deepa Shah for production. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.